My name's Bob Wessel, and I'm an alcoholic heroin. It's good to be here, and it's especially good to be sober this morning. You know, doesn't it feel good not to hurt on Sunday morning? I'd like to take this opportunity to thank the committee for allowing Wani and I to be a part of the Atlanta Roundup. It has been up to now, it's been a great weekend. You know, the love and the fellowship that has been extended here at the Atlanta Roundup, it's just been a beautiful weekend. We certainly have enjoyed that. You know, it's a lot of miracles in this room. It's a miracle that I am here. For those of you who were here yesterday morning and heard Juanita talk, you know it's a miracle that alcohol didn't kill me. It's also a miracle that she didn't kill me. I don't know how this marriage survived. I really don't. I guess it was in God's plans. I guess we loved one another, and there was enough good days in there that we knew that it was all worthwhile. And I do believe that. I believe sobriety, all the hell and the torment, the aggravation that I went through, I think it was all worthwhile. So I think being sober is okay. I have yet to find out anything wrong with being sober. I don't know when I crossed over that invisible line. And incidentally, I do consider myself a beer alcoholic. I don't know if there's anyone in the room who may still be fooling around with beer. Think maybe that you're not an alcoholic. I can't speak for you at all. I can only tell you about myself. My main drink was beer. I drank beer most of the time. With the exception of the last couple of years, it got a little inconvenient, you know, to carry a case of beer around. It's a little bit easier to carry a half pint. But my last drunk was a beer drunk. So I do consider myself a beer alcoholic. I had another problem, too. I had a mother-in-law problem. And I honestly believe that if I could have gotten her straightened out, I would have been able to drink successfully. I was in AA, and I was sober for about 3 weeks before I ever realized I had a drinking problem. I thought it was mother-in-law and kid problem and wife problem. As I said, I didn't set out to be an alcoholic. I can remember when I was about 16 or 17 years old, of many goals that I'd set down the road, of things that I wanted to accomplish in my life. And I look back now, and I can see all the things that was taken away from me was taken away because of disease alcoholism. And I didn't know that at that time. Pat read that fifth chapter, that alcohol is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And I believe that. Because as things began to be taken away in my life, I never once realized it was the alcohol. It was always other things. I don't think I had any dreams of drinking for 12 or 15 years and enjoying AA. I think I thought like normal people thought, the things I wanted to accomplish. When I was 17 years old, Juanita and I were dating through high school, and as she told you, we broke up quite often when we were dating. It was about like we were after we were married, really, about the way it worked out. But she tried to tell me when I was 17 years old, when I drank a bottle of beer, what it did to me. She said, when I opened that bottle of beer, it changed my personality. And I told her she was nuts. It didn't change me. It changed her. She was the one who changed. You know, I believe that she did change. That's the reason I believe alcoholism is a family disease. Long before Wani and I were ever married, my drinking was already beginning to affect her life because she projected and she knew what was going to happen when I opened that first beer. I graduated from high school and I had a splendid opportunity extended to me. I was a pretty good ball player, and I had a chance to play professional baseball. And I lasted 3 weeks at this because of my drinking. They couldn't tolerate my drinking, and I couldn't tolerate their rules. So I just packed up my suitcase, and I left. And I was already on that merry-go-round of lying, and I convinced myself that I didn't really want to play ball, that I was thinking about getting married. And Wani and I were not even dating steady at this time, and I look back now and I think, you know, you ought to be dating someone steady if you're going to get married. At least that was true, you know, 33 years ago. But I come back and I finally talked Wani into marrying me. I promised her that once we were married, I had responsibilities. She wouldn't have to worry about my drinking. And, you know, she believed me and I believed me too. I thought I could do it. But I'm here to tell you this morning that responsibility will not keep this alcoholic from drinking. because we were married and we had seven children, and one of them was pregnant with the eighth child, and I was still drinking. And to me, that's a little bit of responsibility. I don't know how you feel about it. You know, probably the greatest thing that has happened to me other than my sobriety in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous is it's turned this responsibility of raising these children, turned this responsibility around to a responsibility I now enjoy. When I was drinking, it was a responsibility that I hated each and every day. But, you know, after Wendy and I got married, there wasn't any serious problems with drinking, really. My mother-in-law got in the picture right away, and my mother-in-law tried to help me so much. She did. She helped me so much, she almost killed me, is exactly what happened. To show you the kind of woman that she was, she built an apartment for Wendy and I, allowed me to move in that apartment, never charged me a penny's rent. I never once ever thanked her for it, because after I moved in there, I knew why. You know, she built it right next door to where she lived. And then as the kids come along, she'd begin to come over and take care of them and tell me what I should do and what I shouldn't be doing. And, you know, I began to resent her a little bit. And eventually this resentment turned to hatred. And I wound up, after a number of years, with a shotgun in my hand, almost killing her one night. Now, my mother-in-law was in the real estate business. She was very successful. I had a job. I went to work, and I was in sales. And I worked at this job for a couple of years. And my mother-in-law and I had sat down one time and talked about going into business together. And so one day I sat down and talked about it, and she said, "It'll never work, going into business with someone that you hate." By this time, I hated my mother-in-law. But also by this time, I was interested in one thing, that God Almighty dollar. I knew with money in my pocket that I could buy happiness and peace of mind, the love of my children, the love of my wife, and the respect of everyone in the community. I knew you could do this with money in your pocket. I'm here to tell you this morning, this alcoholic could not do it with money in his pocket. Because I went into business with my mother-in-law, and it was a very successful business for 3 or 4 years. I kept this other job that I had, and a lot of things began to happen. My drinking tempo was picking up. And when I got into real estate business, I specialized in selling taverns. It seemed to be the thing that I knew best. I'd done a good job, but really I was getting nowhere fast. And a lot of things were beginning to happen as the children come along. One of them was beginning to talk to me about my drinking, what it was doing to these children, how it was affecting this family. And I could really never see how my drinking affected my family. I think by this time we had, I don't know, 3 or 4 children. And one of them tried to tell me about it, how the kids couldn't study and they were flunking out of school and things like this. And I guess I took that inventory always at the wrong time. Probably on Monday morning when I'd pull myself into that bathroom and I'd stare into that mirror with those bloodshot eyes. My face would all be red and swollen and I'd get the dry heave and I'd hang my head in that commode. And I'd think, what the hell was she complaining about? You know, these kids have got a roof over their head, and they got shoes on their feet. There's food on the table. I don't know what she's talking about. I'm the one that has to pull myself together, go out here and go to work today and earn a few bucks so these kids can have these nice things. But, you know, I can look back this morning, and I know what she was talking about. Because I can see how my drinking affected my children. And I could not see it at that time. I can remember many times pulling into that driveway, and I'd see those two oldest daughters of mine now come running out that kitchen door and skipping across the side porch and down the steps and out the sidewalk to meet Dad, and he got home from work. And then I'd open that car door and I'd stumble up that driveway and see those two girls of mine now stop and look at their drunken father. And that smile would drop off their face and their little heads would hang, and they'd walk back in the house, get away from their drunken father. You know, I never want to have to go through that again, and I don't, as long as I stay close to this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. In almost 22 years now, my children have never had to hang their heads and walk away from their father. I can remember many times coming home maybe at 10:30 at night and wanting to have these kids put to bed. And I'd raise all kind of hell about this. Who ever heard of kids going to bed before they got to kiss Dad goodnight? And, you know, I'd get these kids up, I'd set them down in front of that idiot box, and I'd turn that on, and I'd pop them some popcorn. And, you know, I used to love to do things for my children. I don't know if you ever did or not, but, you know, I can honestly say that I never done any when I was drinking I never done anything for my children because I loved them. I'd done things for my children so they would get on my side and they'd tell their mother what a nice guy I was and she'd get off my back. Thank God it is not that way today. When I do something for my children today, or for my wife, or for you, or you do something for me, I like it to be like Juanita talks about, for free and for fun and expecting nothing in return. But that wasn't true when I was drinking. If I'd pop these kids some popcorn, I'd open me a couple of beers, and I'd sit down and pass out, and Juanita have to get up and put these kids back to bed again. And yet I always said this drinking's not hurting anyone but me. I can remember many times these kids' grandmother coming over to pick them up for the weekend, take them over to her house. And, you know, sometimes I'd let her have them and sometimes I wouldn't, depending on what kind of a mood I was in. I can remember many Friday evenings coming in over there, half drunk. She'd be gathering up her grandkids. I'd ask her what she's doing and she'd tell me, and I'd say, you get the hell out of the house and you stay out. These are my kids. If you want them, you call me and you check with me first. I wonder what these kids must have thought when they saw their drunken father run their grandmother out of the house. And you know, when I'd come to the next day, I'd begin to patch all the pieces back together again. I always convinced myself that this wasn't my fault that this happened. This was my mother-in-law's fault. If she just had the decency to pick up the telephone that day and call me, I would have said, yes, you can have the kids, and everything had been fine, so it was her fault. I remember shortly before I come into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. By this time, I was drinking in the morning. I was down at the tavern one day, and some drunk come in there with a bunch of turtles. And we cleaned turtles all day, and we cooked up a whole big batch of turtle soup. And about, well, I don't know, it was 10:30, 11 o'clock at night, I got to thinking about my six children. I didn't know if one of had fed them that day or not, and I thought they might be hungry. And I took some turtle soup home, and I got them all out of bed. I set them down at that kitchen table, and I heated that soup up. And I can smell that stuff now, and I can't stand the smell of it. But this was important that night. And I poured that soup out, and they didn't want to eat, and I said, now eat. And I got to slapping the two old ones around that night. And I made them eat that soup, and they got sick and threw up, and it was a mess that night. You know, when I come to the next day, I begin to patch all the pieces back together again. Once again, I convinced myself that this was not my fault. This was my wife's fault. If she just kept her big mouth shut, the kids would have loved this soup and everything had been fine. But I know that isn't true because Juanita was not even out in the kitchen that night. She stayed back in the bedroom to stay away from the mess. But that's what alcohol done to me. This mother-in-law of mine, her and I went into business together. As I said, told you, it was a very successful business for a couple, 3 years. And to show you what a nut I was, we was working out of my mother-in-law's home. Had a big front porch across her house there. And her and I sat down one day and we talked about someday we are going to build a new office there. And it wasn't too much longer after that. She took a vacation. She was going to be gone for 6 or 8 weeks. And I decided, you know, now's a good time to build that office. Hell, she's gone. And this builder who worked in the company and drank about the same way that I did, with one exception, I don't think he's an alcoholic. He's still drinking about the same way today. But we decided now's a good time to build that office. We got out a bulldozer and pushed the front porch off my mother-in-law's home. And we built that office, and she got back and seen that it was hell around there for a while, I'll tell you that. It was about 6 months after this that I had to sell my half of the business to my mother-in-law. And I didn't worry too much about this. I was about 24 or 25 years old. And I had great visions of how I was going to live the rest of my life. I was going to sell her that half the business, and I was going to be able to sit down at the tavern and play. I loved to play pinochle and drink beer. I'd be able to sit down there, and you know, when Juanita would want some money for groceries, you know, I'd be able to whip out the checkbook and give her $10 and get her off my back, you know, and you know, everything would be fine. I thought that's what happiness and peace of mind and serenity, the things that we find for free and for fun here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought that's how you got these things. I thought you bought them. And I thought it would work out. So I went in the attorney's office one day and I signed these papers. Sold my half of business to my mother-in-law, and they got out the checkbook and paid everybody off that we were owed, and then they wrote me a check out for my half of the business, and what was left was $7.85. And You don't stay very drunk on $7.85. But my mother-in-law was still trying to help me. And, you know, I never once ever stopped long enough after I lost that business to think whether alcohol had anything to do with this. You know, I didn't think that way. Alcohol did not allow me to think that way. Alcohol told me that mother-in-law stole that business from me and I was going to get even with her. That's what alcohol done to me. She allowed me to work there for another 6 or 8 months. She left my name on a checking account. That's a mistake she made. She eventually found out I was paying a few bills that I shouldn't have been paying, and my name come off there. And one of them began to talk to me about this time about divorce. Now, I don't know if y'all ever talked about divorce around your house or not, but I never did get excited about divorce, because we talked about divorce like everybody else talks about the weather. We discussed it every week or so, and it was... And I knew how to get out of a divorce. You know, when you have 6 or 7 children, really it's nothing to get out of a divorce. And I just promised her, you know, I was going to quit drinking. I would for a week or 10 days, and then we kissed and made up. And you all know, ought to know we did a lot of making up because we have 9 children. But one of you got rather serious this one time about this divorce, and this was shortly before I was introduced to the program of AA. The deputy sheriff, I lived in a little town right outside of Shively, and I knew all the policemen, and I knew the judge, and I drank with him. He was one of our drinking buddies. But the deputy sheriff come over one night and served some papers on me. And I was about half drunk, and I was a smart aleck drunk. I tore his papers up and gave them back to him. And he said, "Bob, you better read those tomorrow when you sober up." And I read them the next morning. It mentioned on there that she wanted some alimony. I can't remember how much alimony she wanted, but she wanted $40 a week child support. And I wasn't too drunk to multiply 6 times 40. I could do that. And I knew I couldn't afford a divorce. And I went down and talked to Father what I should do with this nutty woman I'm living with. And I thought my wife was completely off her rocker. You know, as nice as we had things, but this time I'd gone in the insurance business. I had 3 jobs. I was in the insurance business, I was in the real estate business, and I had this other job. And we had a nice house. It wasn't a home. We had a couple automobiles, and I thought things were really going good, and I couldn't understand this woman I was living with, all this complaining she was doing. And I was telling Father about it, and Father agreed with me. And I know this morning why Father agreed with me. Father drank the same way that I did. He had a problem, too. And but at any rate, he called Juanita up, said, "Get down here, young lady. I'm going to talk to you." And Juanita come down, and I guess I had a conscience. One of you told a little different story than what I'd been telling it. And I guess I heard some of the things she was saying. And anyway, I wound up that day taking a pledge that I wouldn't touch alcohol in any form for 1 year. Now, I don't know if there's anyone in the room this morning who may have had to been dry on a pledge or not. But if you haven't, you don't have to be. Stay here in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous and do it the easy and the comfortable way. I have tried it both ways. And I'll guarantee you that the AA way is a whole lot easier than that pledge. You know, I thought all I had to do was just sign that pledge, keep the cork in the bottle, and you stay sober. It's that simple. But, you know, I didn't know about the terrible agony I was going to have to go through each and every day of wanting to drink and not being able to drink. I made that family suffer. I made those kids and that wife walk around on eggshells. Boy, they didn't dare raise their voice to me. And I can hear Juanita now when I'd come home from work. She'd get the kids off, you know, "Y'all be quiet. Daddy's home. Don't say anything to upset him. You know, he may go out and get drunk." Thank God we don't have to live in that home that way today. Thank God it's not that way today. I guess probably the worst thing of all would be when I'd wake up in the morning. I'd roll over and I'd look at Juanita and there she'd be laying. And I thought this. I didn't say this out loud, but I thought it every morning. I thought, "Damn you, I hate you. You know, I have to get up and I got to go to work today. I got to go out and face these people. And I can't drink because you got that divorce hanging on my head." And you know, that's a tough way to live. I lasted 6 months on that pledge, and I guess Juanita said something or the kids said something. I don't know what happened. But I went out and got drunk. And Juanita said many times, "Thank God that I did, because it relieved all that pressure that we had been living under." It was really about this time that I was introduced to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My brother plays an important part in my being here. I saw my brother wind up in Skid Row. And I saw him found the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought it was good for him because he really needed help. And Norman wasn't sober but about, I think, 3 or 4 months. And he was beginning to stop by and tell me about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And God had his hands on Norman's shoulder when he talked with me. Norman knew me very well. I guess Norman knew if he once would have ever said anything about, "Bob, you need help. Don't you think you're drinking too much?" I think Norman would have known what I would have told him, what he could have done with his AA. So God had his hands on Norman's shoulder, and he'd always talked about what this program was doing in his life, how it was helping him. And you know, I listened to him. I wanted he didn't talk to me that way. Not at all. One, he kept telling me that I was an alcoholic. She was telling me about all the problems that my drinking was causing in her life and in the children's life. And I thought she was nuts. But one, he finally convinced me, and she told you a little bit about why I made my first AA meeting. And I don't think it makes any difference why anyone makes their first meeting. I don't think it makes any difference whether you're forced there, the police send you, your wife sends you, your husband sends you, your boss, or whatever it may be. I think the important thing is that we make that first AA meeting. And I was tricked into making my first AA meeting. One of you told me that I may say something may get my brother drunk, and I should go to AA and find a little bit about alcoholism. Maybe I could help him. And I said, "Well, you know, if it would help him, I'll be glad to go." And I went like a lamb to my first AA meeting. And I didn't get any help, or at least I didn't think that I did. But anyway, when I got back to the meeting that night, I shook my finger in her face and I said, "You'll never take another night out of my life." And I meant that. And I went out and got drunk that night. But one of you still had that divorce hanging over my head. And we went back to a few more AA meetings. It wasn't too much longer, one of you was introduced to the program of Al-Anon. And thank God for the program of Al-Anon. I believe I come in AA through the doors of Al-Anon. If it hadn't been for Al-Anon, I don't believe I would have ever made this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I fell in love with Al-Anon. You know, Wani made a few of those meetings, and it changed her. Man, I could come home, you know, half drunk, and she'd say, "Hi, did you have a nice day?" I thought, man, you know, this program's getting this gal straightened out. I knew she needed help. I would come home half drunk and babysit so she'd get to that Al-Anon meeting. Wani found out a lot of things in the program of Al-Anon, and thank God that she did. I think she went a little far with some of the things that she did, but I'm glad that she did. You know, Wani used to lie and cover up for me many times to the bill collectors, to my boss, to her mother, to my parents. I remember, Wani had been around Al-Anon, I think, for about 6 months, and my boss called one morning, wanted to talk to me, and I thought Wani would lie to him, but she didn't. She said, "He's still laying here in bed drunk. You want to talk to him?" Hand me the telephone. And you try to explain this to your boss, you know, if your wife says he's still drunk, and you can't explain things like this. I remember this credit manager from this department store we used to buy a lot of clothes from, and we had an account there, and we was always charging and not paying very often is the way it worked out. And this woman was always calling, and I used to lie to her, and many times Wani used to lie to her, you know, about one of the kids being sick, and "We'll send you some money next month," and all these things, you know. But not after Al-Anon. This lady would call, and Wani says, "I'm sorry, I don't handle the bills any longer, Miss Snyder. You have to talk to Mr. Wessel about it, and you can catch him at Wolford's Tavern, the number so-and-so." Hell, why? Wani used to give him a number, and you know, I'd be sitting down there drinking with my buddies, have a couple bucks thrown up on the bar, you know, act like a big shot. You try to explain to some credit manager why you can't send them $10 and still act like a big shot. You know, it gets to be a problem. But thank God that she done these things, because really it's the thing that made me face up to the responsibilities that my drinking was creating. As I told you, my mother-in-law helped me so much she almost killed me. But after Al-Anon, Juanita and her mother took her hands off me, and they allowed me to face up the responsibilities that my drinking was creating. You know, I was 28 years old when I was taken to my first AA meeting. And after I made a few AA meetings, I convinced myself that I was not an alcoholic. And I was going to show you people that I was different. Well, thank God this morning I don't have to show anybody anything. You know, all I have to do is just be myself. I'm Bob Wessel. I'm an alcoholic just like I am. And if you like me, that's fine. If you don't like me, that's your problem. Because I'm pretty comfortable the way things are in my life. But I could have proved to anyone in black and white that I was not an alcoholic. And that's really what I set out to do. Because I had too much going for me. I was still working for my mother-in-law. I still had this job. And I spent 11 years with that company. I was in the insurance business. I still had my family. We had 7 children. I owned a couple automobiles. I had a little money in the bank. And I thought things were just great. And I was going to show you that I was different and I could drink Cecil. I guess the only thing I'd done right in the next 2 years is I kept going to AA. I made a lot of AA meetings drinking. I don't know if there's anyone in the room this morning who may have had to take a drink to walk through those doors. If you did, I understand, because I've been there. I don't say it's the right thing to do, but if you had to do it, I understand it. I'd like to say to you the same thing that a very beautiful lady back at the Pleasure Edge group used to say to me every Friday night when I was there. This gal would get me off in the corner after the meeting, and she'd put her arms around me, and she'd hug me, and she'd say, "Bob, we need you here. Have faith. Keep coming back. This program will help you. We need you here and we want you here." Now, I didn't even know that Lil knew that I was drinking. But after I made a few AA meetings, I got on that vodka. I figured you probably could smell beer, and I heard about vodka that you couldn't smell that. And so I would drink vodka all day, and then I'd go to AA meetings at night. And I chewed Clorets, and I didn't want to take a change. I didn't just chew one or two pieces before I went to that AA meeting. You know, I just dumped that whole pack in. And my sponsor says, you know, I walked in that door, and he turned around, and he saw a green foam running out of my mouth. he knew what kind of shape I was in. And you see, I thought I was fooling everyone. I didn't know that anyone knew that I was drinking. But a lot of things happened in the 18 months or 2 years. One he said it was about 2 years that I drank. I thought it was about 18 months. I really don't know. I'm sure one of his dates are far much more correct than what mine are. Because I really didn't know what was going on. And probably worse than that, I didn't care what was going on. I think that happens in most alcoholics' life. It didn't make any difference to me whether it was daylight or dark. I knew every day was going to be just about the same. I knew every night was going to be just about the same. And I guess I didn't want it to be this way. I guess that's the difference between maybe a drunk and me being an alcoholic. I knew it was going to happen every day, but I didn't want it to happen. And I tried my darnest not to get drunk. But it always came out the same way. I lost that job. And to me, this is chronic alcoholism. But this time, I'd already lost that business. I'd been around the program for about a year. My boss's brother called me one Friday night. My boss's brother was in AA. And I knew he'd been in AA, and he had a lot of problems, but he's sober today, thank God. And George called me that Friday night and told me I'd been fired. And I got to crying crocodile tears to George, telling him about my mother-in-law already booting me out of the business, and I needed this job. My 7 children were hungry. And I was thinking about my responsibility as a father and my responsibility as a husband. And George said, "Let me call my brother and see what I can do for you, Bob." It wasn't 15 minutes, I guess, and George called me back and said, Bob, everything is fine. You come on into work Monday morning. I've got it all straightened out for you. And I told George he'd never have to worry about me taking another drink. And George should have known I was lying, because never is a long time. Thank God we have one day at a time in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But you know, I didn't drink anything that Friday night or Saturday or Sunday. I was too scared to drink. And I started in that office Monday morning. I got about halfway in there and I got to thinking what he's going to say to me. And I think thinking for any alcoholic is bad. And anyway, I stopped in. I had a drink. I don't know how much I drank that morning. But later that morning, I walked into the office and I took the keys of the office out of my pocket. Walked up to my boss's desk. I threw those keys on his desk and I said, you keep your damn job. I don't need it. And he hadn't opened his mouth. And I turned around and walked out. Now, to me, that is chronic alcoholism. That is chronic alcoholism, because when I was dry that Friday, I was concerned about these seven children of mine. But when I put alcohol in my system, I was no longer concerned about these seven children. I was only concerned about that next drink. And, you know, I didn't want it to be that way. And, you know, when I took a drink, I did and I went wherever the next drink took me, and I had no control. And I certainly didn't want this to happen. I lost that home. And this is a story in itself. It wasn't a home, it was a house is what it was. I'd gotten about 3 months behind on the payments. My mother-in-law sold that. And I talked her into buying a house, and I said, let's all move in together. And, you know, I was nutty enough to think that this would work. We moved into that house, and I thought, you know, well, hell, she'd been paying most of the bills. She can just pay them all now. And I thought things would work, but, you know, she got just as sick living with this alcoholic as I did, as my children did, as my wife did. I lost that job. I lost those automobiles. I lost that little money in the bank. And I wound up with that shotgun in my hand, almost killing my family. I'd been gone for several weeks, and I come home, and my mother-in-law had changed all the locks on the house. And she told me she had a bench warrant or a peace bond or something out for me, and she told me to get out and stay out that morning. And I decided she can't do that to me. And I went over to the tavern and decided what to do about this situation. And I drank beer that entire day. About 7:30 that night, I decided she can't lock me out of the house. Who does she think she is? And I went over. My keys still didn't fit, so I just knocked the door down to get in. And I can vaguely remember her ordering me off and told me if I didn't leave, she was going to have me arrested. I said, that's a fine thing to do, have your son-in-law arrested. Who's going to feed these seven kids? And she let me know who had been feeding them the last 3 or 4 years, I'll tell you. And she called the police on me that night. And once again, that resentment and that rage, that hatred come up. And I said, I'm going to get even with her. I'm going to show her. And I went down to the basement. I got my 12-gauge shotgun. It's a Browning automatic. And I remember picking up two full boxes of shells. I remember putting three shells in that gun. I hear that chamber slamming right now. Next thing I can vaguely remember as I stumbled up that stairway is kids running and screaming. Get away from my drunken maniac father. You know, it's a miracle that gun didn't go off that night. I was waving around looking for that mother-in-law. I stumbled on up the stairway that night and went up into the attic, and I blacked out or passed out. I don't know what happened. I found out one has told me that her mother had gone into her room to get her gun. She was going to get rid of the problem that night. And it's a miracle we didn't come face to face that night and kill one another or kill several of my children. But I was up in that attic, and things were peaceful and quiet up there. And, you know, I felt good, and I felt secure. And, you know, I'm sure every alcoholic in this room has felt that way. You know, I knew if I could just get these people out of my life, that I'd be able to straighten this thing out and everything will be okay. I've felt that way so many times in my life. And the next thing I can just vaguely remember is a man in a blue uniform. And that's all I remember about this. But one day he tells me, I told that man I was going to blow his head off with a shotgun if he came up that stairway. And, you know, he couldn't see me, and I couldn't see him either, but he didn't know that. And he called out the riot squad that night. A lot of miracles took place that night. Because when he told you, the ladies of the church were meeting that night, and the Al-Anon guys and gals had to meet in another room that night, and that's the only reason they heard the phone ring that night. My wife called AA for me that night. This happened about 7:30. If this would have happened some 30 minutes later, Juanita would not have been there to call AA for me. She would have been gone to her Al-Anon meeting. I can remember many Al-Anon meetings that she went to. I want to tell you about one Al-Anon meeting that she went to, and I would go to any lengths to prove it was Juanita's fault that I drank, as crazy as she was. I come to one, I guess this was on a Friday. I'm sure it was, because that was the Pleasant Ridge group. I come to one Friday afternoon, one evening, laying on the hillside, and just as I raised up, Juanita was pulling out the driveway. I knew where she was going. She was going over to that Al-Anon group to tell those people what a mess I was. I was drinking again, you know. I decided I'm going to show those people what a nut this woman is. And I pulled myself together that evening and went in and shaved and showered and went over to that AA meeting, and I sat on that front row that night because I knew she was upstairs telling everyone what a drunk I was. And when she come down that Al-Anon meeting and saw me sitting there, then they would know that she was lying about me. You know, I'd go to any length to prove it was her fault. But she called AA for me that night. She didn't believe what I've heard many times around AA, to have the alcoholic call first. See, we didn't have a telephone up in the attic, and I was too drunk to use one if it'd been one up there. And these AA people didn't say, "You put Bob on the phone." They said, "Juanita will be there." So I said a lot of miracles took place that night. There was a fellow at the meeting that night, the boy that I'd played ball with, gone to school with, a very good friend of mine. He'd gone in the priesthood. And Father Mack was at the AA meeting that night. And to my knowledge, that is the first AA meeting he has ever been to. To my knowledge, it is also the last AA meeting he has ever been to. He got enough AA that night. And he come over, and my brother and two other members of AA, and they talked the riot squad into leaving and talked the police into leaving. And they come up, and I gave them the shotgun. I wasn't mad at anybody, that mother-in-law. And they took me out and began to pour a little coffee down me. And I began to come to a little bit. And, you know, once again, I began to patch the pieces back together again, and I convinced myself that, you know, this isn't my fault this happened. This was that mother-in-law's fault. You know, if she hadn't called the police, none of this would have happened. It was her fault. But they convinced me I was going to get arrested if I stayed out on the street that night. And I didn't have any place else to go. And they said, "Bob, why don't you go out to Our Lady of Peace Hospital?" They said, "It's like a hotel out there on the hill." And you know, I'd traveled all my life. I'd been in out of 1,000 hotels. And I agreed to go for one night. I said, "I'll go out one night." So I went out, and I wasn't even going to go to bed. And the nurse came in and caught me setting up and gave me a shot and put me to bed. And I went down the next morning to check out, and I found out you don't check out of that hospital. Man, those doors are locked. And, man, I resented this. And I, right away, I said, "I'll get even with those guys. Putting me in here, it's all Juanita's fault." And God works in strange ways in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've been around the program about 18 months or 2 years by this time. And I never caused any trouble around AA. I was a peaceful and I was a quiet drunk. If people would let me alone, I always figured I'd be able to work this thing out. The only disturbance I caused around AA, I went to a meeting one night about, it was about 9:30. It was an 8 o'clock meeting, and I went about 9:30. And everybody was leaving. And I created a little scene that night. I said, "Hell, no wonder I can't stay sober. Y'all won't even wait to start a meeting, you know, until I get here." But I was a peaceful and I was a quiet drunk. And I knew if everybody would get out of my life and let me work this thing out myself, that it would be okay. As I said, God works in strange ways in this program of AA. That psychiatrist come in to see me, and I told him what he could do with his books. And I'm not downing the medical profession at all. This man was a good psychiatrist, and he could have helped me if I would have given him a chance. But anyway, he called my wife that afternoon and said, I'm afraid your husband will die a hopeless drunk. He doesn't want any help, and there's not a thing I can do. Well, thank God the AA people didn't believe that. A lot of AA people come to that hospital to see me. And to show you that I was not looking for any help, I sit in that hospital in the dark. I wouldn't burn their lights. I was going to show you can't help me. And you know, with an attitude like that, you'd think you wouldn't get any help. But as I said, God works in strange ways. I got out of that hospital in 3 days. They turned me loose because I would not allow them to help me. When I got out of that hospital, I began to think, why didn't my three drinking buddies come to that hospital to see me? I know this morning why they didn't come to see me. I know very well. Because if they had come to that hospital to see me, it would have given me the very encouragement that I needed to go take another drink. And I can do that. That's no problem at all. But I don't know if I got another recovery or not. So as I said, God works in strange ways. It was my three drinking buddies that really woke me up and made me realize that the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has something to offer. My drinking buddies did not come to see me, but AA did come. AA people did come to see me. And I'll never forget the night that my sponsor came to see me. My sponsor has now been sober 38 years. I like to talk a lot about my sponsor because he's so important in my life. Bill walked into the hospital that night, that Saturday night, as I told you, I was sitting in the dark. He flipped those lights on, and Bill had a few choice words to say to me. And Bill wasn't very kind that night. He wasn't very kind that night. I can't repeat what Bill told me that night. But when I got out of the hospital that Monday or Tuesday, I went the only place I knew to go to. I went to the tavern to decide what to do about this. But I didn't take a drink that day. I guess that's the only day that I've ever been in the tavern that I didn't drink. I think taverns are made for one reason, to drink in. For some reason, God had his hands on my shoulders that day, and I didn't drink. That afternoon, I went and talked to my sponsor about this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Bill told me a lot about the program that day. Bill told me about honesty and gratitude and open-mindedness and willingness and action. He told me about a higher power that he calls God, and I do too. Bill said, Bob, look back over the last 18 months when you've been running things, and look what's taken place in your life. You know, I look back, and it wasn't a very pretty picture. Bill said, Bob, why don't you try it our way and see if you can't find something? He said, why don't you try it for 6 or 8 weeks, and maybe you'll find something here. He said, if you don't like it, he said, that door swings both ways. And you can go back out and you can go back to the successful drinking you've been doing. And I thought, well, what have I got to lose? I'm going to give it a try. That's how I come in, back on the 9th day of November in 1962. I have not had a drink of alcohol since that time. Nor have I had any pill or any kind of mood-altering drug. I never did really take any pills. I saved all my money for drinking. I didn't waste any of it on pills. I didn't want any part of that. Bill told me a lot about AA that day. He said, won't you try it? And thank God Bill gave me that advice. Bill told me it's not going to be a bed of roses. Bill told me it's going to be a lot of tough days along the way. But Bill also told me it's going to be worthwhile. I can thank God Bill didn't tell me it's going to be easy. And once you sober up, you're going to have a good marriage and everything's just going to be fine. Now, one of you told me that 1,000 times. You know, if you just sober up and quit this drinking, everything's going to be great. But thank God my sponsor didn't tell me that. Bill told me the truth, what it's going to be like. But Bill told me it's going to be worthwhile. And I believe that this morning. I think sobriety is okay and I think it's worthwhile. I don't know when it happened. I don't know if it was 6 weeks or 8 weeks, but I got the desire that I like being sober. I have that same desire this morning. I like being sober. I don't see a thing in the world wrong with sobriety. Bill told me there'd be a lot of tough days along the way, and it has. Been a lot of tough days along the way. I remember when my father died. I'd been sober 3 years in this program of AA. I was down at the funeral home feeling sorry for myself. And Bill walked in that morning, stuck out that big paw of his and shook my hand. He said, "Bob, you've got a lot to be grateful for. You know, you have been sober 3 years in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You've been able to share these 3 years with your dad before he passed away. Situation turning around, I had something to be grateful for." You know, it's hard for me to talk about gratitude. It's hard for me to talk about love. I can tell you that I love you, and I can tell you that I'm grateful. But I think that's something that one human being can see and feel in another. This mother-in-law of mine that I hated so bitterly, she walked out in the office one morning. It was on my fifth AA birthday. She said, "Bob, you've been sober 5 years now. I think you can handle your half of the business again." She already had the papers made out. She laid them down on my desk. She said, "Here, I'm giving you back your half of the business." Never asked me for a penny. You know, I jumped up and put my arms around her and thanked her. And she no more than turned her back. I began to think, well, what the hell did she have to wait 5 years to do this for? And I know this morning why she had to wait 5 years to do this, because I know me very well. You know, if she'd been out there, you know, in 5 weeks or 5 months or 1 year, I'd have begun thinking, you know, she can't run this business without me. She needs me. She needs me. And I'd been out drinking. I found in this program of AA, you know, the things that I have to wait for and the things that I have to earn are the things I hold nearest and dearest to my heart. You know, things come easy. You know, anybody can have them. But you know, you got to get in there and you got to work for them. You got to scratch for them. Some little things come your way. And maybe somewhere along the line, some big things come your way. You know, it makes it all worthwhile. I can remember after we was in this program about 6 years, and Juanita told you a little bit about how we were, about what good AA, Al-Anon, and Alateen family we had. She told you about the arguments we had at home, the arguments we had in the automobile on the way to AA meetings, and then you get out and you slam that door, you know, disgust it, and you walk in the AA meeting, and you turn on, and we walk right back out and start that argument up again. Juanita told you about these. And I had many, many depressions in the early days of AA. And I like to talk about depressions because I know many people do have them. And I know why I had mine. And I like to talk about this because I found many people seem to be in the same situation that I was in. But one is the type of gal that went to these AA meetings and Al-Anon meetings like this. And once we reached these rooms, she could turn on that personality. And she liked everybody, and she was just bubbling over. And, you know, she wanted me to be that way, and I couldn't be that way. I went to those AA meetings. I sat on that back row with my arms folded. I said, "You keep me sober, I dare you." And that's the way really that I was for the first 6 years in AA. But I know why I was that way, because I was telling Juanita how she should be working her Al-Anon program, and she was telling me how I should be working my AA program. And we were going to meetings together, but we was running one another's lives. And we realized what was happening. Someone loved us dearly. Sat down and talked to us about this. And then Wally and I sat down and talked about it. We realized what was happening. I think Wally, for many years, had wanted me really to be the kind of a guy that I am now. She wanted me to be able to walk into an AA meeting and put my arms around someone and kiss them and hug them and tell them that I loved them. And I couldn't do that for the first 6 years in this program. So we talked about working our programs ourselves, but going to the meetings together and trying once again to reunite this family. And we began to do this. And, you know, great things begin to happen in my life, and great things begin to happen in Juanita's life. And with this freedom that she gave me, it allowed me very shortly, I think, to be the kind of a person she really wanted me to be all along. I can walk into an AA meeting now, I can put my arms around any of these gals and kiss them and hug them. And I put my arms around any guy and hug him. It's no problem at all. I feel very, very comfortable in doing this. I remember how uncomfortable I was in the early days doing this. But I think this is a freedom that was given me and given to Juanita because we begin to work these programs in our lives. I think it's easy to work these 12 steps or work the principles of this AA program for 1 hour at this meeting. When I leave this meeting, we start heading up the highway. I think that's when it's important to begin to use these principles of this AA program in my life. And I think as long as I do this, a lot of good things will happen in my life. You know, I've been sober 22 years on the 9th of November. That's about 21 and a half years, I guess. I don't know. But I like to talk about my length of sobriety. I'm not bragging about it, but I'll guarantee you this, I am quite proud about my length of sobriety. And you should be proud of yours. There's some people in this room that I know that have been sober much longer than 21 and a half years. There's also some people in this room I know have not been sober that long. Someone who's been sober 15 years and 10 years. There's been some people in this room that may just be sober a year and some 6 weeks. There may be that very person in this room this morning who may be just sober a week. Probably the most important person in this room is that guy or the gal that may just be sober today. And this one day should be very, very important in your life. Because if you will allow it, it will be the beginning of a new way of life for you. So your length of sobriety is important to you. You know, we hear in AA so much about people having slips. You know, we hear about Bill drinking and before long Mary's drinking. Before long we hear about them drinking together, which may or may not be true. I don't think we talk enough about our sobriety. I think it's terribly important that we let new people know when you walk through those doors that there is a new way of life here for you. And you don't have to drink again if you don't want to. You don't have to drink if you don't want to. I don't think you're any different than what I am. And I think you deserve a fair break. I think you should give yourself a chance and try and see if you can't find a new way of life because I believe it's all worthwhile. My sponsor is very important in my sobriety. You know, for many years I used my sponsors. I told you my sponsor is 38 years sober now. He's 73 years old or 74. Very, very sick. Has cancer. He knows it. He's accepted. He knows he's dying. But he's accepted this. Bill and I went to meeting Tuesday night before I come down here. I had to go over to pick up Bill, and Bill was unable to walk. I had to pull the car right up to his apartment door and help him into the car, put him in his wheelchair. We carried the wheelchair up to the meeting. But this man has shared so much of his life with me. And you know, for the first 5 or 6 years, I used my sponsor as a whipping post. And Bill listened to every problem that I had, things that I wouldn't dare tell anyone, I was able to tell my sponsor. And you know, probably the greatest thing that has happened in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is this friendship and this love that this sponsor and I have created. You know, I have found that Bill needs me too. You know, your sponsor needs you too. I used my sponsor for so many years. And I found out that my sponsor has problems too. You know, I didn't know sponsors had problems for many years. Never realized it. Never once really ever crossed my mind. I thought, you know, when I come in, my sponsor had been sober, I think it was 17 years at that time. You know, I thought anybody sober 17 years, hell, they got this thing made. You know, it's a cakewalk, you know. You know, I found out my sponsor has a lot of troubles too, a lot of problems. And I was able to share a part of his problems, his life. We was able to sit down and share many things together. And it's just been a great life together. If you have a sponsor, and if you don't have, for God's sakes, get a sponsor. Get a sponsor. If you don't think you need a sponsor, your sponsor needs you. Your sponsor needs you. And listen to your sponsor and share with him. You know, I have to do what my sponsor asked me to do. And I've done this for 21 and a half years now. When I wake up each morning, I ask God to help me to stay away from that first drink. I ask God to help me to accept what He's going to give me today. And it's worked for 21 and a half years. And I think as long as I can continue to do that, I can stay sober another day. Now, I don't always accept what God gives me. But I ask Him every day. And I think the important thing is I ask Him. You know, I'm still human, and I accept God's will when it's coming my way. You know, when things are going good, I accept it. I have no problem at all. But you know, when things are going in the other direction, I'm the same old self again, you know. I say, why does it have to be that way? That's the reason it's very important that I am still an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I attend my home group. And I share with the new people. Because as long as I share with new people, I think that's how we continue to grow in this program of Alcoholics Anonymous, as we try to give away what was so freely given to us. This brother of mine who took me to my first AA meeting died about 9 years ago. This mother-in-law of mine that I hated bitterly died about 10 years ago. And to show you what this program done in our lives, this mother-in-law that I hated so bitterly came to every one of my AA birthdays. She didn't understand AA. She thought it was good because it straightened me out. She didn't think Al-Anon was necessary because there's never anything wrong with Juanita. She done the normal thing anyone would do living with a drunk like me. But she cared enough about me and she loved me enough to be at every one of my AA birthdays. She made 13 of them before she died. In the last three or four, she was too sick to get out of bed. But she'd get out of that bed and come over to that group to be with me on my AA birthday. And I'll guarantee you this, if I'd have kept drinking, my mother-in-law wouldn't have come to the funeral home to see me. That's the way she felt about me. And if I'd have kept drinking, I wouldn't have wanted her there. That's the way I felt about her. But it turned this thing around. I can remember many times after sobriety, this mother-in-law come into the office and put her arms around me and hug me. She said, Bob, I'm leaving for a couple of weeks. I'm going to be gone. You take care of things, and I know you will. A lot of trust that she put in me. This brother of mine, who was sober in the program about 3 years, then he drank for 30 days, and he put together another 10 or 11 years. Died of cancer. Norm and I were very close. And I remember how important Norman's sobriety was to him. And you know, if I can remember this, I can stay sober another day. Norman, as I said, was in the hospital dying of cancer, and Norman knew it. But he didn't. He never gave up faith. We talked about it. I sat on his bed for many days, and we talked about him getting out of bed and going fishing. We were going back down to Cumberland Lake because we enjoyed it so much being together. And I was in to see Norman the day before he died. But this time he was too weak. He couldn't even roll over. The nurse walked into the room to give him a shot of morphine. And he couldn't roll over. So I rode Norman over, and she gave him a shot of morphine in the hip. She left the room, and I rode Norman back over. And you know, Norman looked up at me, those big blue eyes of his. He said, Bob, you know, I shouldn't be taking this stuff. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I could get hooked on this. You know, the next day Norman died.
To me, that's the principles of this AA program in action. You know, I've had a lot of tough days along these 21 and a half years. Been a lot of tough days. There's never been anything so tough that I've had to take a drink over, because I think about my sobriety. I think about what Norman said to me, how important his sobriety was to him. And I can get through that day. That's how I would try to work this thing one day at a time. And I think as long as I can remember that, I can stay sober another day. God has been so good to me, this family that He has given me. These 9 children. And God, we are blessed with our 9 children. You know, it's almost a thing of the past. It's almost hard to believe that anyone has 9 children, does not have a child with a drug problem or an alcohol problem. It's almost unheard of today. But we've been blessed that way. I guess maybe it's because our children were all brought up in the program of Alateen. Of course, I know that's not going to keep any of them from being an alcoholic. But I'll guarantee you this, it has relieved all the tension. And I know there's no sense in worrying about whether they're going to be an alcoholic or not. And we do have a couple of them who drink. But Wanny and I both know this, they've been brought up in these programs and they have enough education to know that if there ever is a problem, they know where to go to. And we have to turn them loose because there's nothing else that we can do. We have 5 grandchildren. And God, that's a blessing in itself. This oldest daughter of mine, and to show you how important the Al-Anon program has been in my life, this oldest daughter of mine was very active in Alateen. She met this boy whose mother was an alcoholic and had been around AA and not very successfully. And he had a bitter understanding of alcoholism and of AA. Cindy was dating this boy. We invited Happy to attend a Al-Anon roundup with Juanita and I over at Sumatonga. And Happy was introduced to Al-Anon that weekend, and many of the AA guys and the AA gals and guys told Happy about the program that weekend. That Saturday afternoon, Happy had a good understanding of what the program was all about. He and I went up on the mountain and sat under the cross up there overlooking the entire camp area. And that afternoon he asked me if he could marry Cindy. This happened in an Al-Anon roundup. You know, it wasn't but about 2 years ago, but Debbie, another my daughter, brought her, at that time, friend to Sumatonga. And just last May, Joe and Debbie were married. And that happened at Sumatonga, at an Al-Anon roundup. Al-Anon's been very, very important in our lives. Really, it has brought this family back together again. We have 2 children left at home, 2 daughters, 20 and 21 years old. Our kids have all grown up in Alateen. And I'd like to tell you a little bit. I'm going to read a letter here. I normally don't do anything like this. I'm going to read a little note that my daughter gave to Wanny and I before we left. I got to tell you a little bit about Teresa. So Teresa's 20 years old, quite an athlete, very, very active in a sport called field hockey. Teresa had an opportunity to go to the Summer Olympics training camp at Colorado Springs, Colorado. Wanting and I saved our nickels and put her on her plane and sent her down there. And Teresa made this camp. And She was promoted to the next camp with the understanding that if she made that camp, she would have to stay down there for 6 or 8 weeks and possibly participate in the Summer Olympics. Teresa decided she didn't want any part of this. And she flew back home. She was quite upset and concerned about the fact we'd spent money to send her down there. And she'd made this decision of how we were going to accept it. Her mother and I both talked to her and said it was her decision. Whatever she wanted, it was her life. And this letter, I think, will explain to you in about 2 minutes, if I can read it, what I've been trying to tell you, what this program of AA, Al-Anon, and Al-Ateen has done in our lives. Says, "Dear Mom and Dad, I wanted to tell you all one more time how I appreciate the trip to the Olympic Training Center. It's wonderful that you all love me so much to let me experience what I have through hockey camps. To me, home is the most wonderful place. You all have made home to me a place where love is self-existing. I love to just hang around the house because the members of the families are always stopping by to say hello. Our house is like a gathering place, and you all have cultivated that attitude. I hope you all are not disappointed in me because of my choice to come home instead of staying for the second camp. I thought I did what was best for me. I think that is the most profound statement for a 20-year-old daughter to make. The ability to be able to make a decision what she thought was best for her, and for us to be able to accept it. I know I was determined to stay. It just didn't seem to be the right thing to do. I'm very lucky to have parents like you. You always support me, and that's a great feeling. I can't count the number of times my friends have commented on the love you give me. I hope I give enough love back, because you two always seem to be giving. The two of you are always ready to drop everything when Mary and I take the hockey field. No matter where we travel, it always is topped off by your presence. It's so nice to hear you cheer and yell. I hope when I get older and married with kids that I will be able to provide the love and support that you have provided me with. Well, have a nice convention and make sure you send the people I know my love. Have a safe trip, and I love you all very much. See you soon. Love, Teresa." I think that's a beautiful message of what this program has given Juanita and I, and what really I've been trying to share with you this morning. Thank you.